live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Again to the day that the Lord has made.
It's not my day, it's the Lord's day.
It's an opportunity for us to do what we can with this responsibility that we've been handed.
It's I don't know, is it beginning to weigh on you a little bit?
Do you feel like I do, this intense need to wake people up, and you almost want to slap them? I shared with you yesterday this insane statistic that a great number of Democrats don't know that the death rate has dropped from COVID-19. 75% of Republicans know that it's dropped, and it has, because we were supposed to see a 3% death rate. We're nothing like that. CDC said 0.26%. And that still includes double and triple counting. We're finding other cases of that today. Well, we know that. Washington State's reporting death numbers that are inflated by 13%, and they admit that. But 75% of Republicans know the death rate has dropped. Only about 30% of Democrats know that. So when they hear you saying it's time to open up, they're still living in that world where 3 million people are going to die. They have no clue whatsoever that things have changed in terms of the death rates or the reinfection value. It was supposed to be that when one person got it, they gave it to three other people. Then it was to, right now, JMZ's numbers are 0.84. Last time I heard him speak of this, when he was kind of cornered and forced to state an actual data point. So do you feel this weight to say to people, you have got to wake up? Here's the problem. The biggest problem I see is we are watching literal tyranny. Because there is an aspect to tyranny that Mark Stein, when he was in for Rush, explained so utterly brilliantly. I want to share that with you as we look at now the Seattle Spirit scene. Hey, Jay. Can you talk about not picking and choosing laws we follow, please?
I'm not going to enforce an unconstitutional law.
It is impossible to have a working democracy if everybody gets to decide what they think the Constitution is just for them.
Criminals deserve our scorn and our condemnation and our righteous anger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's you, Jay. That's you. So Mark Stein, when he was in for Rush Limbaugh, said something about tyranny. And he said that tyranny is always capricious. Okay? So it is capricious. Jay Inslee's shutdown has been capricious. Here's what I mean. You take Power Alley Fitness. We've had Mike from Power Alley Fitness on the show a bunch. He finally had to shut down because they were going to take a couple million bucks from him, probably. A couple million. Crush him. For a gym that everybody who came in had to have their temperature taken, every member. The employees had their temperature taken every hour on the hour. Every member had to carry with them a bottle of disinfectant and a disinfecting wipe. They had to wipe down every piece of equipment. If they didn't, they'd be asked to leave. The gym was fully cleansed every single night, fully cleansed and fully disinfected. In other words, everything Home Depot doesn't do, everything pot shops don't do. Jay Inslee told Sideshow Bob, you crush that man. Crush them. It's costing the folks at Power Life Fitness, Mike, to keep his business open, $50,000 a month. How long can you pay $50,000 a month before you go bankrupt? Capricious. QFC doesn't have to do that. Pot shops don't have to do that. Metro buses don't have to do that. They are demonstrably less safe than this gym. Why can't the gym open?
Oh, well, we can't have people, picking and choosing what the rules mean in the Constitution.
Find me in the Constitution where it says that the places that are cleaner and more safe should be shut down, Jay.
I'll pay you $10,000 per word of the Constitution where you can point to me where it says,
and the founders said that when a place is extra clean, you got to shut it down.
Tyranny is always capricious. I got a note yesterday from someone on Twitter saying, oh, help us, help us. Thurston County is considering requiring masks as you walk around. I want to be super clear. If you are someone who has decided for yourself, you want to wear a mask. I don't care. You're an adult human being, make a decision. If a business, you work at a business, they're going to tell you to wear a face covering. It's their business. You could quit. But it's their business. It's their property. It's their decision to make. You're on their property on their time. So if that were to come to pass at this radio station, you know, where we do the show, I will walk in the lobby with a washcloth over my face and then go into the radio studio because you can't wear a mask when you do a radio show. I just won't be in the common areas. Why am I so on about these masks? This is a breaking point, folks. The studies. There is a National Institute of Health. It's posted on the NIH website. It is a clinical study that indicates wearing masks may make the infections worse. It comes from New Zealand. They measured healthcare workers versus general populace. It may make it worse. Common sense will tell you that wearing a piece of cloth over your face is not going to stop the virus. If you have ever done drywall projects, you wear a drywall mask, you get done, you have less drywall below the mask, but it's still there. Okay, so we all understand this. We asked Dr. Stephen Atlas, Scott Atlas from Stanford University, 14-year chief of neuron radiology, about this, and he said, a cloth mask is basically silly. It will do nothing. Wearing them outside are madness. Yes, we'll get to Inslee. Tyranny is always capricious on purpose. On purpose. Because they want to break you. They want to teach you the truth is what I tell you it is. The guy over there with the thick beard, that's a woman. You'll say so, or I'll destroy you. Your kids are going to be taught to have group sex in seventh grade, or shut up. Why are you doing this? Because I decided to. Just a reminder, you only have until the end of this month to get the sex ed law on the ballot. Please, 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 right now, as you're listening, go to informedparentsofwashington.com. Please find the location near you where you can sign this referendum to get this on the ballot. Tyranny's always capricious. Why is it a good idea for teachers to have handouts to teach kids how to masturbate using vegetables and fruit? Because I said so. Capricious. Informedparentsofwashington.com. How does it relate to masks this way? This is Dr. Lockdown Fauci a few weeks back talking about masks. Listen to the whole thing.
When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
Yeah, and he picked his nose with his mask. There's also the unintended consequence, as is shown in this study that's on the NIH website, that when you wear something on your face all day long, it provides a warm, moist place the virus can build up in your beak. And you would otherwise expel it, but you're not. So you build up a viral load. That's weeks ago. Tyranny is capricious. That's what Tony said a few weeks back. Remember, the CDC had said, don't wear masks. They don't work. Now, we see them parading around in masks. Capricious. What, did the medicine change? Did the scientific results change? Did Tony know what he's talking about then? Now he doesn't know what he's talking about? No, this is the dance of tyranny. The truth is what we tell you it is. We've always been at war with Eurasia. We've never been at war with Eurasia. Well, which one is it? It's what we tell you it is. Wait, does gender discrimination matter if there's no such thing as gender? Shut up. You'll do what we tell you. This is Fauci recently. So from people, it makes people feel better in the pandemic. It might stop a droplet, but it's not the protection you think. From that to suddenly this. Listen to the whole thing.
No, it does, Jim. And I mean, I wear it for the reason that I believe it is effective. It's not 100% effective. I mean, it's sort of respect for another person and have that other person respect you. You wear a mask, they wear a mask, you protect each other. I mean, I do it when I'm in the public for the reasons that A, I want to protect myself and protect others, and also because I want to make it be a symbol for people to see that that's the kind of thing you should be doing.
Is this medical advice? Does that sound like solid medical advice based on data? This is a guy who knows exactly what he said a few weeks ago about masks. You can hear him hemming and hawing, and then he admits it. It comes out. Fauci's a guy who's not very good at hiding his tyrannical instincts. I wear this because it's a symbol. It's a symbol of what we should be doing. This is why I am. The stopping point for me is the mask outside. In the government tells me to wear it, I'll never do it. I will not put a mask on in this situation. Now, if there's, God forbid, a bio attack, which Bill Gates seems to think is very, very likely, if there's a bio attack, well, yeah, I'd prefer to live and not choke to death. It's capricious. Utterly capricious. Like this, like with Jay Inslee. Now, you've been to a QFC, right? You've been to Home Depot. You've seen the buses go by, the choo-choo trains. The airlines have never stopped. The pot shops, the abortionist clinics, so-called clinics, abortionists, garages are still open. But the churches have been shut down. Here's capriciousness for you. This is why this is tyranny. It's just like the mask. Why are we being told to wear a mask? Well, it's a symbol of what you should be doing. It's loyalty to the technocrats. Why are the churches forced to worship outside in a parking lot?
So right now in phase one, outdoor religious services can be held on the organization's property or immediately adjacent, up to 100 individuals using face coverings.
Okay, so 101, that'll kill you dead. 101 people, that'll kill you dead. Well, it's 100 people. Well, that's what the science says, right? No. You'll do what we tell you to do. Put the mask on. Put the mask on. It puts the mask on its skin, or it gets shut down again. Here we are in the pit. It puts the mask on again. It puts the mask on its skin or it gets shut down again. Capricious. 100 people are safe outside wearing masks. You're not catching the disease outside. Why you need the masks? Capricious. Essex Porter, to his credit, asked Jay Inslee, why do you think you have this constitutional power?
Considering the First Amendment protections of religion in the Constitution, why do you feel that you have the authority to regulate religious services at all?
And he goes into an absolute non-answer. And I didn't want to play it. Don't even want to play it. Because this affects real people. It does. And we look at how this affects real people on the totter.
How much is enough? How big does this pile have to be?
One party rule has run rampant in Washington state.
And when you do those progressive things, what you get is tremendous economic growth.
To urgently pass a strong tax on the largest businesses.
The Todd Herman Show asks, what did it cost you?
So we hear Jay Inslee in his capriciousness saying,
we got to let the criminals run free because of the COVID-19, but we're going to, in the strongest terms, we're going to lambast these Nigerian scamsters, but we'll let the criminals locally run free.
It's capriciousness, just like the treatment of elderly people is capricious by Jay Inslee.
So where'd Jay Inslee heard him tell Brandy Cruz?
Oh, Brandy, we don't want to, you know, I hear politicians saying that they want to put elderly people on desert islands for the rest of their life. And I just think that's wrong. And that's not what we should do. And he went on this filibustery kind of mansplaining sort of bullying attempt, attempting to bully Brandy Cruz, who wouldn't be bullied. But we heard that. We played that this week and talked about it. And I saw a note from a friend of mine about something her father is going through in a long-term care facility. And Christy joins us on the Todd Herman Show. Christy, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I'm reading the Facebook. I see this note, and I'm filled with fury because of what is happening with your beloved father. And he's 94 years old?
He's 92, and he's one of those old North Dakota farm boys.
Yeah, so he's still got a lot of life at 92. I mean,
he sure does.
Yeah. And so he's in long-term care, but this sounds less like care to me, and it sounds a bit like a prison.
Yeah, we're absolutely shocked at how a lot of these residents are being treated. His care facility is actually an independent living care facility, so these people that are in there are not ill. They are just, you know, they're fully sufficient. They take care of themselves except for wanting to have their meals cooked and having some extra entertainment and social activities.
So he's in this independent living facility. He's paying. Do you mind giving us an idea of how much he's paying to be in there?
Yeah, he pays about $2,300 for a very small studio. So, you know, we're counting that a lot of that money is going for those extracurricular activities that help keep their mental health up. And, you know, we all know that when people lose that will to live, it doesn't take long.
So we're talking here about $30,000 a year and independent living, but there's nothing independent about it from what I hear. I hear a 94-year-old adult, born-free human American who is being told exactly what he will do, exactly where he will stay. So tell people about this treatment.
Yeah, well, you know, to me it feels a lot like being treated like a child, because we've tried to follow the rules that they've implemented. You know, every couple weeks they're getting new letters about the changes in policies, and, you know, I got to reiterate, my dad has all his wits about him, but my concern is for a lot of the elderly people that are in these facilities that really are confused easily, that don't have family around that can advocate for them. You know, if we weren't trying to visit him, we wouldn't even know what's going on. But every time we've come, they've changed the rules, and he's tried his hardest to abide by them. And then kind of the last straw for us was a couple of weeks ago, I went to visit him and bring him his supplies. And we were going by what we thought were the latest rules. They had taken away any places where we could visit with him. They had, you know, systematically gotten it tighter and tighter, and, you know, masks and 3 temperature checks a day. And, you know, we had to sit in this outside area for a while, which is fine. You know, we're trying to consider all the aspects of this COVID thing. And so when they had taken everything else away, my dad thought, well, I guess we can only sit in your car then. And so we sat in my car. He sat in the back seat. I sat in the front. And this is an SUV, so there's pretty good, you know, space between us. We kept the windows down even though it was raining. And as soon as he walked in, they come and meet him like he's a 2-year-old and discipline him with, you're in quarantine for 14 days. You know, you've broken the rules. And, I mean, this is a 92-year-old man who's run businesses and had a farm and been responsible, part of the greatest generation. They helped build this country. And now they're being treated like they can't make a decision. They can't see their families. It's really pathetic.
Well, and this is the part that really, you know, that angers me, that I, on one hand, I firmly believe that people who are at risk for COVID-19 need to be offered all the protection they want. And that certainly right. You don't want your father to become infected, A, because it could lead to his death. He'd be vulnerable for that. B, it could lead to, you know, an infection within the living facility. But at the same time, again, this is a born free American human being who,
right.
In my judgment, he too has the right to say, I choose to take this risk. And I could see the long-term
right.
care facility saying, okay, well, then you can't stay here. Then you need to go live with your family. You need to do something else. We can't have you here taking these risks. But it sounds to me like they've become jailers.
Yeah, it's been very frustrating for us because, you know, not every person can just stop when they find out something like this and find a place for your person to live, your loved one to live. I mean, we waited months and months and months to get on a list to get into one of these facilities. So, you know, he's got a lot of fear as far as maybe getting kicked out, and then where does he live? And when your family, you know, like, it's kind of funny in our situation, you know, we've got three of his children that live here locally, so he's, you know, lucky to have that. But, you know, we've made decisions in our life knowing that he's well cared for and he's in a place that's working for him, and then now to all of a sudden have that thrust on us to say, we got to find a place for him. Maybe he lives with us, but none of us have a house that can accommodate a 92-year-old, you know. They can't have steps. They got to have handicap accessible things, you know. And so I know a lot of people on my post are saying, get him out of there. And I mean, I agree, we're trying, but it's not that easy. You know, it puts a big wrench into everything, especially when we're trying to deal with the COVID. And I've got kids that are out of school now, and, you know, this is just an extra strain. And there's so many aspects I don't understand. I mean, if they have, you know, my husband and I actually have a home that we are landlords to, you know, by default. We couldn't sell it at the time. So, I mean, our renters aren't paying us, but yet here we are. My dad pays this huge rent, and he's not even getting what he paid for, and we still have to pay. He's still got to pay the rent. You know, I don't know if the laws that renters don't have to pay due to COVID actually even apply to the elderly care facilities. Probably not.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly, this is such a big part of the frustration. And I hear about sequestration of your father in a very, very small studio apartment that, no, you're staying in here. And you're getting meals, no social interaction, no seeing your family, none of this. Even if you sign off on the risk, we will not allow it. And I just ask, by what right does a private business taking nearly 30 grand a year from your father then turn around and say, we're also your jailers for 30 grand a year?
Right. I mean, it seems to me they should be at least discounting the rent. I mean, not to make this into a financial thing, but the financial burden is very heavy on this type of care. And especially if they're actually being denied a lot of the things we pay for, that's not fair. And I think they should be given their choice, like you said. I mean, and especially if the staff, and I understand the staff has to be there, but if the staff are able to wear a mask and be doing their job and the facility feels like that's adequate protection, then why can't family wear a mask and sit outside? They have a beautiful courtyard. You know, put up a tent or something to help accommodate your residents so that their mental health can stay up on a level that's going to be adequate to get through this.
Right. And this is right. But that it's easier for them to put up a wall to say, you all are going to stay in your little apartments. You're in the tiny apartments, small. You're not going anywhere. You're not seeing anybody, than to employ some creativity to say there is a courtyard. You're not going to catch COVID outside. It has a 90-second life span in the sun. Yes, put up some tents, put up some areas with some socializing.
You know, they did actually I did get it verified through the letter that I've seen now, that even if they leave to go for a medical appointment, they get an automatic 14-day quarantine. So they have gone to the extent of punishing them if they have to go out for their medical needs. And for my dad, in his condition, in his case, he needs to have his blood checked every 2 to 3 weeks for a heart condition he has. He's on Coumadin. And so basically, he's going to be in full-on in-your-room lockdown if he chooses to go to the doctor and have his heart, his medicine checked. You know, it's really, I'm wondering about the legalities of this at this point. So it's just another point.
Wow. So, punishment for going to see the doctor when you have to go see the doctor. It's extraordinary what's going on. may I ask your father's first name?
Maynard.
All right. Let's do this. All right. Todd Herman Show, folks. Lord, give Maynard strength. Let him know that he is loved, that he's got a family and a daughter, Christy, who loves him dearly. And let's just right now send all sorts of prayers right to Maynard and surround him with love for this North Dakota farm boy. And we love him.
And we just wish for absolute comfort for him. Christy, I appreciate you joining us on the show, and I know that you represent just thousands and thousands of people. And our significant prayers for Maynard. You tell him I look forward to seeing him on his 95th birthday, 3 years from now. Optimistic music as we turn the corner on the Todd Herman Show towards the end of this, and the personal notes, and we'll get to that. And oh boy, I just feel overwhelmed today with all that we need to talk about. Let's talk about this move that the president appears ready to make against Twitter. So Twitter enjoys a protection from liability that Facebook does as well. They get to pretend they're not publishers. So as a publisher, you employ writers, etc., who write things. And if you edit what they write, you are involved in making the decision about what is said. And therefore, you could be held to account for things that they said. And for instance, if I were to say something really, if I were to, with, you know, malice aforethought and knowing what I was going to say was absolutely false and doing it to, you know, to harm even a public person. If I were to do that, I could get in serious trouble. But so could the company that owns these radio stations. And I don't personally think that's fair in the case of talk radio, because they can't jump in here and stop me from saying something. They could later fire me immediately. Facebook and Twitter are pretending that they're not publishers. But when they brought CNN in, when Twitter brought CNN in to edit the president, you're telling me that adding CNN to this fact-checking board, you didn't know that they would go at the president? And Twitter has had to walk back their fact-checking about mail-in voting. Now, here's where this gets really weird and deeply disconcerting. This is an example. It's a local example that I want to get to the national example and the international example of what these community safety boards, so-called, at Twitter, etc., what they are and what they're admitting they are, because it's unbelievably frightening. This is a local example. So Como's Steve McCarron is on a media conference call with Katie Hutchinson, who's the head of health statistics at the Department of Health. And Steve does a good job. He's asking her about, look, we've seen these reports that you are publishing COVID-19 death numbers that aren't true. So what about that? Now, listen.
To clarify something, just to make sure I understood it correctly. So there was a discussion about cases that clearly had different causes. I think it was said that there was less than five that had something to do with gunshot wounds. And then approximately 20 to 30 deaths that are a little bit harder to definitively rule out, but they apparently didn't have COVID-19 listed on their death certificate. Are those specific numbers listed within the total count right now in what we're seeing on the dashboard? And then the other question that I have is, I know it was explained that, you know, this entire process of reporting is complicated. What do you tell the general public about being able to trust that number that they see reported on the dashboard every day and making sure that it's accurate?
Yeah, so this is Katie, and I can respond. I'll start with your first question about the five, less than five cases that are gunshot wounds and the other 20 to 30. So yes, those numbers are currently reflected in our numbers that are posted up on the web.
So we'll stop there. That's a government official telling you that, yes, we are counting people who were killed by guns, well, by people using guns, as COVID-19 deaths. She's also telling you that, yeah, those cases where the people had deadly cancer and later got COVID-19, we're still counting those as deaths from COVID-19. Yes, we are using fake numbers. Will Twitter fact check this? Nope. because they're part of the uniculture. Will Facebook fact check this? Will this get called fake news? Because no, because Cuomo right now is posting this and it's fake news. We are still not at the 1,000th person to die from COVID-19 in Washington state. Still not. And so the president is going to Twitter and saying, you are picking and choosing what you think are facts. I'm sorry. It's a factual statement to say that mail-in voting has resulted in fraud. Heritage Foundations counted 1,285 cases of vote fraud, many of them through the mail. I shared with you yesterday, the Department of Justice has indicted a guy for monkeying with people's ballots. He's a mail carrier. And by the way, it looked like he was trying to change people to Republican voters. I don't know if it was his job, it was his desire to, you know, help the Republicans, or it was to disqualify them, because all of a sudden, all around the country, it's not just in Washington state that you're being told you have to put your party preference on the outside of the envelope. He did that. So it is a factual statement to say mail fraud or voting fraud occurs through the mail. It's also factual to say it's an ample opportunity for fraud. That's what the president said. And Twitter put up a so-called fact check on that. Well, this is where this gets incredibly, incredibly disconcerting when you think of the uniculture. Okay, the uniculture is technocrats and people, they're leftist scientists, always to the left, technocrats, statists, and celebritists, people who worship celebrity. This is a member of Facebook's board that is looking at, that is going to police speech. They'll decide what makes it onto Facebook and what doesn't.
The challenge for the board is to decide at what point your freedom of speech ends and the human rights of others take over.
Is that an American value? Does your freedom of speech ever interrupt someone else's human right? Perhaps if you are yelling them down so that they can't make a speech. But no, there are no human rights to never be offended. There's no human right to force a person to agree with your opinion. Unless you're a statist. And sometimes it's not just speech. I mean, Fauci is describing the mask as speech. You know that, right? Now, it's a symbol. We wear this as a symbol as what we should do. It's like a symbol of loyalty. So it's speech. It puts the mask on its skin or it gets shut down again. That's the reality of what President Trump is trying to stop. Speaking of the uniculture and celebritism, did you hear this Fox dating show? 15 men compete to try to get the same woman pregnant.
I've sort of aged myself out of the dating pool, and I want to fall in love with the man that I can see as the future father of my children.
We ended up finding these amazing men.
She has to choose between us jabronis.
In a perfect world, I think I really want it all from this experience.
Just a reminder why we're here, fatherhood.
I really believe that it's going to work out with one of these guys in the end, and I can't wait to see who it is.
That's celebritism. And what is it doing to the act of parenting? It's doing the same thing that the World Health Organization, who are leftist scientists, statists, are doing to your schools. It's degrading the value of human sexuality and relationships. Please, please, please go to informedparentsofwashington.com. Find any of the hundreds of locations near you where you can sign the referendum to get this madness, this perverse sex ed law on the ballot so we can vote it down and shove it down Jay Inslee's throat. We'll come back and wrap up the day with a personal note next, right here on the Todd Herman Show.
Main Street.
Down on Main Street. What personal notes today, I cannot help today but to intertwine something. I often keep personal note, just that, personal. It is either a story from my life or from someone I know or something I've observed or been told. I must intertwine the sex ed bill, which is now law in Washington State, with some of the toughest lessons in my life. There's a reason why I am so unbelievably upset about this perverse sex ed law. And there's a reason that I'm pushing you so hard and begging you to go to informedparentsofwashington.com and to find a location and sign that referendum to get it on the ballot. There's years ago, it was senior year, and I was working in Pizza Place. Loved that job. I was the manager there. I was very, very, very proud of that job and the work that I got to do there. And that I was, you know, by the time I was a junior there, I had people working for me. I loved that place. I still love it. It's a different kind of place now, but I loved it then and I love it now. And there was a young woman who had come to work there, and she was a girl with a reputation. Okay. And I had such a crush on her when I was in junior high. And frankly, at that time, I still find her super attractive and interesting and also kind of sad. She was kind of a sad girl. And so one night she'd stayed late to clean. That was her role. She was on for that night. And we were wrapping up. I guess it was probably midnight. And so I broke a rule and bought some wine coolers and put money in the till. So, yeah, I wasn't old enough to drink. And so I asked her, hey, do you want to go and talk? And so we did. So we went out in my white Chevelle, all jacked up in the back. And I think I had, yeah, I did an eight-track tape player in there that my dear friend, my best friend's brother, Ed, put in there for me. So we parked. And so we were up above the river. And so we parked and we drank wine coolers. And so we talked. And she shared a bunch with me. And I shared a bunch with her. And I did tell her, man, I'll tell you, folks, I still remember her phone number. I remember when I got my yearbook back in junior high, ninth grade yearbook back, and oh my gosh, her phone number's here. I never did get the guts to call her, ever. But here we were, my senior year, her, I think junior year, talking in my Chevelle. And it got to be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So I really had to get home. I was tired. She was tired. And so I said, hey, I wanted to drive you back to the pizza place. She said, no, I'm kind of afraid to drive home on my own this late. Plus, I've been drinking. So I drove her home, said, hey, I'll pick you up in the morning. Let's go get your car. So when I pulled up in front of her house, and we coasted up because of the loud engine, coasted up, I pressed the brakes. And she said, hey, thank you for not trying anything. And I said, well, I don't, it didn't, she goes, oh, no, I think you're really cool. I had a crush on you too, but it's really neat to have someone try something with me. And I said, I kind of had a sense that maybe there's like, maybe that's not a happy topic for you. And she said, no, when I graduate from here, I'm going to leave. I'm going to disappear. And she did. And I talked years later to a friend of mine who was that girl's best friend. And she said, well, you know the story, right? And I said, no, I well, she said, oh, no, she was molested by two teachers. I was stunned. I mean, she had told me these things. And I've seen it. Look, I saw a wrestling coach in a hotel room at midnight with a high school cheerleader. She begged us, do not tell. She begged us, do not tell.
We didn't. Jim Feuda, Crime Stoppers Global Solutions, told me this sex ed bill, this law, will make it easier for pedophiles and sex traffickers. He fights sex trafficking for a living. He has seen the curricula. How much easier will it be for people in authority to abuse children when since kindergarten they've been talking to them about sex acts? I'm not going to say this girl's name on the air. I will use her the first letter of her first name, S. Will you sign this for S? Please go to informedparentsofwashington.com right now. Please find a signing location. Please sign it for S, because I'm going to tell you something. There's an S in your life. Those S's waiting for us to save them, to prevent abuse. The great Rush Limbaugh fighting a brilliant battle is next in the Todd Herman Show. We do air every weekday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Go be well, be strong, and be kind.